Good morning. If you're not already there, open up to Psalm 46. Psalm 46. It's kind of hard to believe it, but Ashley and I have now been here for 6 years. I don't know at what point you get tenure, but I need to start applying for whatever John got. I need to try to work on that. Oh, okay. Wow, man. You guys withhold that tenure for a long time. Oh, that's good. Now, we're very thankful, very grateful to be here with you all. Your financial support allows me to do what I love, to teach the Bible, study it, preach it, and I can't thank you enough for allowing me to do that and giving me the opportunity, giving us the opportunity to not only share God's word with you, but our lives with you. You guys have become our family, and that is very meaningful to us so much. We do live in some pretty wild times, though, don't we? Very wild times. The pandemic hasn't just made many people sick, it's killed people. And for us in this room, even more, at least how we've been impacted, our lives have been turned upside down. We're separated from the people we care about. Everything is different. And now we actually live in one of the top hotbeds in the nation for the virus. Who would have thought that a couple of months ago? 2020 has not only brought a pandemic, but it's also brought an economic recession as well. Stable jobs are being lost. There are rumblings that the trade war with China may be stirring back up again before we know it. Not only that, but we're living in the midst of a pretty large civil rights movement. Injustices and partiality are rightly being exposed. And to add to the turmoil even more, there are groups that are stealing the voice of those in pain and using and manipulating them for anarchy and riots. And so it's just chaos out there. On top of all that, we're in the midst of yet another election year, and we all know the mud's being slung everywhere, and somehow we as Christians are supposed to rise above all that and not join into the mess and the fray. The world is turning upside down, isn't it? Totally upside down. We live in one of those moments in history that I don't think is going to be forgotten. You know, maybe 2019 everyone will forget about, but not 2020. And naturally, at least if you're like me, this has been quite unsettling, hasn't it? Quite unsettling. And what's really tough about this is we have to go through one of the most challenging times that at least from a big picture perspective that many of us have gone through, and we have to walk through it almost completely isolated from one another. And I don't know if you're like me, but that's been really tough. That's been really tough for me. And in the midst of all of this, I think a lot of questions can come to our mind. How should I think about the things that are happening? What should I say about the things that are happening? What is happening? Or even more, maybe we're plagued with questions about the future. What is this country going to look like in a year? What's this church going to look like in a year? I know that's kept me up awake, kept me kind of bothered lately. What is it going to look like? As everything is up in the air right now, the world is turned upside down. I think it's really helpful to go to Psalm 46 and gain some perspective from believers who, you would guess it, it would be hard to believe, they've actually been through harder times than we've been through, even more chaotic times than these, however chaotic they were, these are. And yet they were resolved to not be afraid. Why? That's what I want us to think about as we read through this psalm yet again, piece by piece. Daniel's read the whole thing for us, and we'll look at it piece by piece. And as we read piece by piece, here's what I want you to look for. Notice how the psalmist, the sons of Korah in this instance, notice how they artfully depict pictures of chaos, waters rising and wars coming, but also notice how they interweave with these pictures of chaos, pictures of God and why they refuse to fear though all this chaos is around. So That's what we're going to consider from this psalm this morning then, four reasons why we're not afraid. Because you're not afraid, right? We're not unsettled. At least we're not going to be by the end of this, right? So four reasons why we refuse to fear in the midst of this. And the first one is, it's because God is our refuge, our ever-present help. Go back to verses 1-3. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though the waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. Think back to Genesis, how Genesis paints the picture of how everything was before the beginning of creation. The world was covered with dark, chaotic waters. But then God spoke, and he pushed down the waters, lifted up mountains and dry land. But then the world was filled with sin, and God reversed everything, reversed creation, put it back to like what it was before, and sent the waters back on the earth. And the waters covered through the flood with Noah, covered the world yet again and made it uninhabitable. But even still, God sustained his people in that and again pushed the waters down from underneath the mountains so that people could live in the world again. And so the sons of Korah say here, hey, we've got perspective. You notice what they say? They say, even though the mountains move into the heart of the sea, even though the waters roar and foam, we're not going to fear even though all that stuff happens. We know what's happened in the past. We are confident. We're not going to be afraid. Why? We've seen this before, and God has been the refuge in the past, and he will be now. He is our refuge. Do we see him like that? Do you see him as a refuge, a person that we run to for safety and for cover from the storm? I don't know how much you read Mesopotamian literature, but in the Mesopotamian account of the flood, the gods send the flood upon the earth because they were annoyed with humanity. That's how the Mesopotamians explained all this. But as the floodwaters rose up to the heavens, the gods themselves became terrified by the floodwaters. And in this epic, the gods start hiding behind their heavenly walls because they're afraid of the floodwaters that they have created themselves. I think sometimes we can think about God in that way and forget that he's not like that. Maybe we become so unsettled because we don't see him as a refuge, or maybe we just don't think about him at all. How's he thinking about all this? He's not scratching his head, thinking, man, what has happened down there? I don't know what to do about this. He's not surprised by the events then or the events now. Why can we be so unsettled, though? Why? I mean, we believe in God. Maybe it's because we struggle to really make him our refuge. Maybe it's because we have other things that are blessings, but sometimes we make other things our refuge. Think about how the writer of Proverbs, how Solomon gives some wisdom about what we take refuge in. He says, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous man runs into it and is safe. A rich man's wealth is his strong city, and like a high wall in his imagination. Here's the reality. Maybe we become so unsettled because we have so many refuges and high towers and walls that we're used to running into throughout time. Hey, listen, I've got a recession-proof job. I've got an emergency fund. I've got a good education. We've got lots of people in the church, so we're stable, we're fine. We've got lots of people with experience. We live in a strong, settled nation with a good foundation. We're going to be totally fine. I've got friends, and yet we've run into all those refuges in the past, and now we run back to them, and we're so unsettled now because they're gone. Recession-proof jobs aren't recession-proof anymore, are they? Maybe emergency funds start to run low. You can't even see your friends. Hardly at all, except for these few moments. With 6 feet, mind you, 6 feet, it might become 30 soon, who knows? All our strong cities have crumbled. So often, I think we can imagine these beautiful blessings God gives us as fortresses that can keep us safe. And it's hard to make God our actual refuge because it's hard to see Him. We see all these other things that can become a refuge. And so let's think differently about God. Let's see Him as an ever-present help. I think it's easy to not view prayer in the right way. Maybe we think God can't really be relied on. We've called upon Him in the past, and I'm not really sure that anything happened. But the psalmist says, no, He is a very present help. Run to Him. Let's run to Him. Tell Him our fears and tell Him our anxieties in this time. And then maybe we find that we're not so unsettled. And then maybe we'll find that we actually get the help that we need. Because here's the reality, brothers and sisters. We do need help. We are in a very shaky time, and not one of us knows what things are going to look like on the other side of this. Silver and gold, they're purified by fire. But what about hay? We could either come out on the other side of this with God at our side, purified, stronger, or a total chaotic mess. It's up to us. Will we hold on to God? Will we entreat His favor and seek Him as our refuge while the waters roar? So let's not fear because He is our refuge. Let's not fear because we have the immovable city of God. Notice verses 4-7. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage. The kingdoms totter. He utters His voice. The earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. A couple years ago, I saw one of those videos that depicts the borders of the nations over the course of thousands of years. I don't know if you've seen those videos, but they're really cool. It shows how these borders have changed over the course of decades and centuries and millennia. And it was amazing just to see how much things have changed even in the last 100 years. Everything's always shifting. And when we read the Bible, in fact, right here, it's saying the same thing. The nations are always raging. Kingdoms are tottering. Borders change. Everyone's fighting, plotting, scheming. Everything's constantly moving, and we can feel that even in our world today. Borders shift in the Northwest. but as everything shifts and change in the nation's rage, he says, no, we have a firm city. And you notice how he contrasts with this picture, with the picture before. Before it was waters foaming and roaring and threatening the mountains. But now the waters have turned into a calm stream that goes through Jerusalem and provides water for the city. But if you know Jerusalem, that's kind of weird because there is no stream or river that goes through Jerusalem. So what is this? There are streams that make glad the city of God, the habitation of the Most High. How could that be? It's most likely a poetic depiction of God, how He is a river that runs through the city that sustains His people and keeps them safe and glad and fills them with joy, gives them confidence. God is at the heart of this city, they say, so the city will not be moved. Let me tell you, there were lots of armies that came against Jerusalem. And eventually, Jerusalem did abandon God, and so the city did crumble when God abandoned the city as a result of that. But before that day, God would not let Jerusalem fall. Until they abandoned Him, it didn't matter how many times armies came against that city. Somehow, every single time, the next morning, they were all dead or gone. It didn't matter. The Jerusalem then is a picture of the Jerusalem to come. That Jerusalem eventually fell and not one stone was left upon another. But we don't hope in a city that rises up from the earth that men build with their hands. As Revelation talks about, we hope in the city of God, the habitation of God that comes down from heaven, not up from the earth, but down from heaven. And Revelation 22 depicts that a river does run through that city, and we will see God's face there. He keeps its foundation firm. Why do we talk about all this? Why do they say this? Because they recognize that other cities aren't immovable like that city is. And it's so important for us to remember that because we live in a nation that is growing, it seems, all the time. Isn't it? It just seems like everything new is always popping up around us. New construction. I live in a new home, a new neighborhood. And as those who live in a growing nation live in a time that has been one of the most massive economic expansions in all of history, maybe at the tail end of that, who knows? I'm not going to predict the future. But we live in that, and so it's hard to remember that really, you know, the rest of the world, they all live on top of generations and generations of rubble that are a testimony to the fact that cities fall. I live in a new neighborhood that from 100 years from now will probably be old and worn down, abandoned, or run over, and they'll build new stuff on top of it. What's new today will be gone tomorrow, but not with the city of God. We need to remember that as people who live in so much wealth, because we need to make God and his city our refuge and our hope. We've been promised a city that won't fall, a kingdom that is recession-proof, a home that won't flood like Houston area homes do, a family that won't divide, and a king whose voice melts the plans of those who rage and overthrow nations. You look at verse 6, he utters his voice and the earth melts. And so let's not fear. We will not fear because we have the immovable city of God. But we also will not fear because we have perspective. We see history. We know that God brings desolations and he brings peace. Notice verses 8 and 9, my favorite verses in this whole psalm here. Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth. He makes wars cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. In times like these, it's really hard to see the forest for the trees. It's hard to remember that God has brought stuff like this upon the earth hundreds, maybe thousands of times before. He's brought desolations and he's brought wars and then he's ended those wars. He's brought pandemics and then he's ended them. Are we living in tough times? Yes. Unique? Not at all. Not for one moment. Again, consider how many layers of rubble the rest of the world lives on top of as a testimony to the fact that God has brought desolation before, but then he has allowed the world to rebuild yet again. I think the challenge in the midst of these desolations, as we gain perspective and we think, hey, this has happened before, the challenge is we see the peace at the end of the tunnel. We see that, you know, he makes, as he says here, he makes wars to cease, the bad times to end. We see that, but we want to get to that now. We don't understand why the turmoil. Well, go back and notice. He says he brings desolations on the earth and he makes wars to cease. Here's the reality. So often throughout God's word, God uses desolations to bring peace. At the end of Revelation, all the chaos, what do you have? Peace, the new city. That's the way things work, right, with God. As Paul says in Acts 14:22, it is through many tribulations that we must enter the kingdom of God. Or when Zechariah talks about how God is going to bring his holy city into the age to come, you notice what he says? He says, in the whole land, two-thirds shall be cut off and perish, and one-third shall be left alive. And I will put this third into the fire and refine them as one refines silver and test them as gold is tested. Here's the reality. God's going to bring peace. He always does. But in the midst of the turmoil, he's refining us. The city of God is not ready for the age to come yet. We still need to be refined. And as Zechariah talks about, Not many make it through the tough times. Only one third make it through so often. That's the picture, at least in Zechariah. We can so oftentimes be borderline deists and rationalists who think our scientific explanations explain away and rule out God's activity. We know exactly where this virus came from or where this or that came from. And so nothing is of God, right? God has no clue what's going on here. He has no hand in it whatsoever. We need to recognize that God has been actively ruling the world for thousands of years. And in every generation, he sent his prophets to say, hey, I did this. I rule the kingdoms of men. I bring them up. I bring them down. And then we sit in the 21st century and say, well, not today, because I can explain it away and I understand. I've got a phone. I can see the source of everything. See right here. And we forget, and it makes us unsettled because we forget that it's God who's in control of all things. I'm no prophet, and I can't say exactly what God's doing, but we know in each generation, God has always been using these times, desolation and then peace, to refine his people. One day, though, it'll be over. We'll get through this. But one day, all wars will cease, right? All guns will be melted down, and it will be over. That's where all history is headed, and we need to remember that. All this turmoil will be done. God's got this. But one more reason. The sons of Korah remind us of one more thing to remember that will cause us to not be afraid in all this. And that is the ultimate end of all history, the most important thing to which everything is headed, and that is that God will be exalted in all the earth. Verses 10 and 11, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. So many throughout time resist God and think his rules are burdensome. They try to throw them off. So many mock God and his ways. But you know what God says here? He says, be still. Be quiet. Cut it out. So often I've read this verse in the past as the calm comfort to Christians or to God-fearers saying, hey, be still and ponder that I am God. We should do that. But actually, this is not the Hebrew way of saying that. There's a way to say that in Hebrew, but this is actually a command, like shouted at a child. God is shouting at the people. He's saying, be still. All you're running around and raging, you need to stop and know something. I'm God, and you think you're going to be exalted in the earth? You think you can mock me and win? I will be exalted in all the earth. I will be exalted among all the nations. Cut it out. That's kind of the tone here. Cut it out, you rebels. The world that mocks God needs to know this message. But the church needs to know this message too, because in our modern thinking, I think we are dangerously close to thinking we can outthink God and his ways, redefine right and wrong, redefine how God has set up this world. The message we need to hear if we're ever tempted to be ashamed of God and to think, maybe his ways are a little antiquated, God will be exalted in all the earth. And any who have been ashamed of him and his ways in the past, he will be ashamed of them at his coming. Let's not construct a new God in our own image, but let's long for this God, the God of the Bible, and his ways to be exalted in the end. But hearing this warning to the nations can also give us comfort, though, as God shouts down the nations and says, I will be exalted, be still, realize who's king, who's God around here. We can, as we see him do that, we can actually be comforted, right? That makes arrogant people angry. How dare you talk like that to us? But humble people, that fills us with resolve. And we say with God, your name be exalted in all the earth. Let that day come. Let the people see how great you are and that you should be king over all, that they should bow the knee to you. Though millions are infected, powers sometimes work injustice. Though people riot, though cities crumble, and though kingdoms totter and the earth gives way, we will not fear. Will we, brothers and sisters? We will not fear. For God is our refuge. His city is our hope. We've been here before, or rather, he's been here before, and he will be exalted in the end. If you need help in your walk with God, encouragement in these tough times, you are absolutely not alone. Talk to one of the elders here. Talk to me. Talk to John. We're happy to talk with you, counsel you, study God's word with you. If you'd like to come forward to the front and make your needs known to the church, you can do that while we stand and while we sing.